Do you feel that you provide comprehensible input to your students? Do you have a solid understanding of how beneficial this is to their language learning? Hopefully you're thinking, yes, indeed, Joshua, yes, we talk about it all the time. I get it, comprehensible input. Well, an important part of this process is also checking that students do, in fact, understand. So in this episode, we're going to look at effective strategies and techniques that you can use in your classroom to gauge student comprehension. And then, what do we do with what we learn from those comprehension checks? So let's jump in. Are you a language teacher looking for some reassurance that what you're doing in the classroom is on the right track? Or maybe you're looking for some ways to teach even more effectively? If you're one or the other or somewhere in between, you've landed in the right place. This is the World Language Classroom Podcast with your host, me, Joshua Cabral. You're about to get tips, tools, and resources so that your students continue to rise in proficiency and communicate with confidence. Let's jump in. Vamos, allons-y. Hello, my friends. Bonjour, mes amis. Hola, mis amigos. Welcome to the World Language Classroom Podcast. I am Joshua Cabral, and thank you so much for being here, for being that teacher who's listening to a podcast about language teaching. It's just one of the many things that makes you an incredible educator, so thank you so much for doing that. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about comprehensible input, and I know that this is something we talk about a lot, CI, comprehensible input. It's a theme that comes up in all of the workshops and conferences and probably in your department meetings and everything that we're talking about. So it's incredibly important, and we are increasingly understanding as a teaching community, as a language teacher community, that central role of students' understanding of language as they move up that proficiency scale and acquire language. We're getting to that place, absolutely. But I'm going to take a little bit of a different spin on it today. So we will revisit and make sure that we totally understand what that is when we say comprehensible input. But then we're going to talk about how do we actually check to see that our students are in fact understanding. And when we do that, what do we do with the information that we learn from that? Do we just keep going regardless of whether or not they understand? How do we change it up? So yes, we're going to talk about comprehensible input, but it's going to go a little further, and we're going to look at how do we actually check to make sure students are understanding, and then what do we do with that information that we learn from those comprehension checks? So the importance of comprehensible input cannot be overstated. That's why we talk about it so much. It truly is the foundation on which students build all of their linguistic abilities and skills. And a lot of this is definitely based on Stephen Krashen and his research and his publications and his theories. And he has his monitor model, which is sometimes referred to as the input hypothesis. And in this, he emphasizes the significance of comprehensible input as the key to acquiring language. Now, Stephen Krashen originally published on this monitor model in the late 70s, early 80s, but it has been revisited in recent years by Lichtman and Van Patten, and they're seeing that there are a lot of parts of it that are still holding true, even though it's going on, 40 years old. But to recap what that monitor model is, or the comprehensible input hypothesis, Stephen Krashen's theory is more than just comprehensible input. It's actually five pieces to his hypothesis. So they're five individual yet somewhat interrelated theories, and comprehensible input is just one. So to quickly recap what those five parts are, the first one is his acquisition learning hypothesis, where there are these things that we acquire, these parts of language that we acquire, or language in general, that we acquire on a subconscious level rather than just learning rules, which is on the conscious level, and that he separates that into looking at acquired language and learned language, and our goal is that language is acquired and not just the learned rules. And the second part of the hypothesis is indeed his input hypothesis, and this is where everyone hangs their hat on the comprehensible input notion. And the input hypothesis says that we have to understand language in order to acquire it. And that doesn't mean completely, but he refers to this as I plus one. So I is your complete understanding of language. And then plus one is when you are engaging with language, which is just a step more challenging on the proficiency scale so that you are always growing in proficiency. But the input hypothesis part is where we get all the comprehensible input theories from and all of our techniques and methodology. Then the third part is the affective filter hypothesis. So this is basically where students are feeling comfortable and able to engage with the language and they have a low affective filter. If they have a high affective filter, that means that they're not going to engage with the language and there are sort of these blocks up. And then there's the natural order hypothesis. And this just says that there are certain structures that are going to be acquired in a particular order, regardless of how they are taught or how students engage with them, that certain structures are going to be acquired in a certain order. And that differs by language. And then the last part is the monitor hypothesis. And this is the one that we don't talk a lot about, particularly in our CI realm. And the monitor hypothesis says that when you do learn rules, that the monitor is your conscious learned rules, and that as you produce language subconsciously, that acquired language, that the monitor, the learned language, the learned rules act as sort of a filter and that you could self-correct as it's coming out. So Stephen Krashen has this one overarching theory, which he calls his monitor model, sometimes the input hypothesis model, but it's really five parts. And the input hypothesis is the one that we tend to latch on the most for comprehensible input. But as I mentioned, even though this is going on 40 years old in terms of a theory, Lichtman and Van Patten in 2021 published an article titled, Was Krashen Right 40 Years Later? And what they essentially saw is that, yes, there have been a lot of evolving ideas and research and second language acquisition, but the ideas have evolved from those original ideas that were posited by Krashen in the late 70s. They have evolved, but they are still driving second language acquisition research today. But they're often not acknowledged, and we're using new terminology. Like instead of saying the acquisition-learning distinction that is part of Krashen's original hypothesis, we use language like implicit versus explicit learning or grammar teaching, but it's essentially the same thing. And then his input hypothesis, we're just saying now it's communicatively embedded input or comprehensible input. And so we're seeing, even with this revisiting of the original Krashen research, that it is crucial to ensure that the language input is just that one step above a student's current understanding. So we call it their I plus one. But still, it is fundamentally important that students are understanding language so that they can acquire it. And this makes comprehension checks a vital part of the entire process. So this is what brings us to really the crux of what I want to be talking about on this episode. So we have put together this idea, comprehensible input, where does it come from? Why is it important? So now we're going to look at ways to make sure that the input is comprehensible, and then to check that it was in fact comprehended by students, and then what to do once we have, you know, gauged that and we have that data. For those of you that like to see it all in print, I do have a blog post that walks through this with all the examples and everything, and you can get that on my website. So it's at wlclassroom.com/comprehensionchecks. So wlclassroom.com/comprehensionchecks. If you want to have this as a resource going forward, if you want to see it just in written form, and the link to that will also be in the show notes. So now that we are revisiting this understanding that the input needs to be comprehensible to students, but not completely, not 100%, because we want to keep that I plus one. So it's mostly comprehensible, but it is pushing them up a little further. So they have to rely on what they do understand to make sense of those parts that they don't. So how can we make sure that the input is comprehensible? And I'm going to focus here on verbal input, where students are listening. So it'll be a little different if we're looking at reading as a source of comprehensible input. And I have episodes on that as well, and I will revisit that as well. But for the purposes of this discussion and comprehensible input, I really am focusing on the verbal listening input. So to ensure that it is in fact comprehensible, we want to start by ensuring that the topic and the text type align with the student's proficiency level. And when we talk about text type, we mean, are they understanding single words or phrases or entire sentences? So the language being at their proficiency level, at their text type, being aligned with that is really going to influence whether or not they understand. So that's the first thing we want to do, is we want to make sure it's at their proficiency level plus one, remember. Then beyond that, in the moment, we want to be using visual cues, body language, and target language equivalents, perhaps, that can help students to make sense of the language that they don't understand, that they don't yet comprehend, that plus one. So anything that can be visual or body language or using target language equivalents, like instead of saying the word team, you could mention a particular team, a sports team, rather than mentioning, oh, a singer, you can mention the person who is a singer as an example. That's what we mean when we're talking about target language equivalents. You could also do cognates in there. Those are also target language equivalents. And then we want to be gradually delivering the content and simplifying the language. And by simplifying, that doesn't mean that the concepts have to be simple, but that means that lowering the proficiency level or bringing it down to their proficiency level. And also embracing circumlocution to convey any of the message or the intended meaning. And this is also a great way of modeling to students how to circumlocute, because that's when they will be using the language they have to get across ideas for language that they don't have, or verb forms they don't have, or vocabulary they don't have. So it's teaching them to circumlocute. And so we should do that a lot as teachers, is to use circumlocution as a way to model to students how you can use the language that you do have to make sense of the language you don't understand, but also to communicate the language that you don't have. We also want to incorporate authentic resources so that we are providing genuine context. So that's really helpful to get students interested. So another thing that Stephen Krashen talks about is we don't just want the input to be comprehensible, the language to be comprehensible, but also compelling and interesting, so students do want to understand it. Because you could be doing lots of comprehensible input and doing all these things to make it comprehensible, but if it's not something students are interested in, or they don't find intriguing or compelling, they're not going to be interested in understanding it. So using authentic resources is a way of making the input compelling for students. And as we are implementing all of these techniques and procedures to make the input comprehensible, we want to be checking for comprehension along the way. That is one of the most important things to do when we're doing comprehensible input, because we could be implementing all of this with the assumption that students are understanding, and maybe they're shaking their heads or saying they understand, but we have to actually truly make sure that they are understanding. And if they're not, then we need to do something differently to make sure that they are understanding. So now let's look at how we are going to check for comprehension to make sure that these are actually effective, all of these things that we're doing. Very frequent comprehension checks are essential so that we can gauge not just student engagement to see if they're interested and engaged with it, but if they are truly understanding. And when our comprehension checks are effective, they're going to provide us with insights into the student's learning, their understanding, their progress, and that then is going to allow us as the teacher to make informed decisions about how we are moving forward and to make adjustments to make sure students are understanding, or to maybe even make it a little more challenging if the majority is being understood. So there's a lot we can do once we have checked for understanding and where we go from there. So we'll hit up on that in the end. But for right now, let's focus in on some strategies for effective comprehension checks. So we're implementing all the things to make the input comprehensible. So then how can we check for comprehension? The first thing is something not to do. The least beneficial way of checking for comprehension is to ask a student, "Do you understand?" And I often hear this when I'm in workshops, and people will say things after they do a big explanation and something is pretty complicated, and they'll say, "Does that make sense?" And everyone in the room says yes, because they don't want to be the one in the room to say they don't understand. Or they think, "Yes, of course I understand." And to all of us in the audience, we actually think we do understand. So when somebody says, "Does that make sense? Do you understand?" we say yes. But in reality, we don't. We just have our own understanding of what we think we understand. So in those moments, we should actually be showing that we understand something. So that's what we want to do with our students as well. So what else can we do besides just ask, do you understand? Do you get it? Do you follow? All of those yes/no questions that don't actually tell us whether or not they understand. So the first thing is to use targeted questions that require a thoughtful response. And of course, we want to keep this aligned with the student's proficiency level. So not just, did you understand that story? But ask them specific details about the story to gauge whether or not they understood, whether or not they understood particular parts. We can also integrate formative assessments, and these can be in the form of like exit tickets. You know, as students are leaving the classroom, they could give you a slip of paper, or you can even do it verbally as they're leaving, where you ask some quick questions to see how the majority of the class was in terms of understanding what you did that day. You could do short quizzes, more open answer, maybe true and false, but if it's false, have them correct the answer so that you're making sure that it's not just like a yes or no question. You could do short surveys to gauge students' understanding at different stages of the lesson. You could use Google Forms to do something like that, where you could have open-ended questions. But again, more than just yes, no, more than just do you understand, does this make sense to you, but to have to actually articulate their understanding in some way. And so another way we can do this is by organizing like group discussions where there are peer-to-peer interactions, and this is going to encourage our students to articulate their understanding of the language that you could do this for reading or the language that they're listening to as well. And then you can see how they are interacting, what they're saying, the information they're providing, and that's going to give us insights into how much of the language they actually understood. We could use other interactive activities that require students to apply the knowledge, the understanding of the language, such as role plays or debates or problem-solving tasks. This will definitely be a higher proficiency level. You'll be doing this at the intermediate, mid to intermediate high. But in there, you will be able to see if students are providing information and details within those role plays, within those debates, within those tasks that you're giving them. If the details are inaccurate, then you can say, oh, maybe they weren't understanding it. We need to revisit it. At the novice level, not so much of this. I think we'll do more of the other things that I mentioned a little bit earlier when it comes to the novice level. You can also have students show their understanding with visual representation, not necessarily by providing language or output in terms of providing linguistic output, but they could create diagrams or infographics, concept maps, anything that's going to reinforce that you can see that they understood. So this visual aspect is not necessarily creating with language, although at a higher proficiency level, we want to move towards showing their understanding through the target language. But at the more novice level, just some visual representation will show their understanding a little better than that. And one last suggestion for checking for understanding is maybe using some sort of reflective journal or a learning log where students can express their understanding of the content, and you can see if they need further clarification. You could do this digitally. You could do this as an exit ticket. You know, any of those things there where students are going to respond to a prompt. And I like the idea of a journal where it's ongoing, because we're not talking about full-on journal entries that are like a page long. It could be two or three sentences, but as you're going through a unit, they can continue to add on to that particular journal on that topic, and they can see their progression as they're going through. And you can also look back and see the details they're putting in there, which is why it's useful if it's digital. You can check it pretty easily. And you can see if those details are accurate generally for the majority of the class as you're moving forward. So those are some ideas for checking for comprehension that is truly authentically checking for comprehension that moves beyond the, did you get it? Do you understand? Where you can actually see if they have latched on to some of the details that are in there. And what you might also consider implementing is some of the total participation techniques. This is more so for in the moment to make sure students are understanding as you're moving through listening or moving through reading something. But the things I mentioned earlier were more holistic at the end. Did you understand all of this? Whereas some of the total participation techniques are more in the moment, because you can more pivot depending on the feedback that you get from students and their understanding. So total participation techniques are from a book called Total Participation Techniques, Making Every Student an Active Learner. And this is by Humilian Himeli. And I actually have an entire episode on these with Timothy Chavez, and it was episode number 120. And I will put that in the show notes if you want to go back and listen to the entire episode about total participation techniques. Timothy does a great job of really explaining exactly how he uses them in his class really effectively. But I will quickly highlight a few of the techniques that are particularly beneficial for formative comprehension checks. And one is doing a think, pair, share. And this is where we want to encourage students to think about a question or prompt, discuss their thoughts with a partner, and then share their ideas with the class. So you can do that in the moment really quickly and then move on. You could do something like four corners, where you use the four corners technique to prompt students to choose a corner of the classroom that aligns with their response to a specific question or statements. You'll list those up in the different corners. And you can also do jigsaw activities. And these are activities that require students to work collaboratively in groups, where each student is responsible for a particular or a specific aspect of a larger concept, so different things that they were listening to. So you can have them all come together and they can see, oh, where there was the mismatch or where I didn't understand. So these total participation techniques, there are lots of them, there's a whole book of them, but these are just a couple of them that you can do in the moment that help you to actively engage students in seeing what they understood, actively checking their comprehension that moves beyond the just did you understand. So we've done all of our comprehensible input. We have all our techniques to make sure that it's understood to students, that it's comprehended. And then we looked at all of our ways to check for understanding. And there is some that holistic after the fact, after they've listened or during. So using some of those total participation techniques. So that's only part of the process, because once we check for that understanding, what do we do with what we learn from those comprehension checks? Because the insights from comprehension checks, that's what's going to allow us to tailor our teaching and our instruction to meet the students' needs more effectively. So as you are doing these comprehension checks, remain open to pivoting in the moment, that you might think, okay, I did all of the techniques to make sure that this was comprehensible, but when you do a comprehension check and you ask some detailed questions or you get an exit ticket and you look at them and you see, oh, I guess most of the class didn't really understand this. That means that we then need to modify our instruction moving forward, perhaps do it again in a different way with some other ways to make it comprehensible. But the whole point of doing the comprehension check is because this is a formative experience for us as teachers, and we're going to move forward based on the information that we get from those comprehension checks. We might see that they are all really on board. They get it. They get the vast majority of the details, and you're able to keep up with just what you're doing, and you can continue from there. You might also learn that the text was a little too simple for students and you want to push them a little more with a little more challenging text the next time that's at a bit of a higher proficiency level, whether they're listening to a video, listening to a podcast, anything like that. So use the information that you get from the comprehension checks. It's not just to say yes or no, they understood, but we use that to pivot if we need to and use that as an opportunity to really inform our instruction moving forward. So to recap our ideas about providing comprehensible input, you know, we started by looking at that importance of making input comprehensible and all of Krashen's input hypothesis. And remember, that's only one of the five parts of his whole hypothesis is the comprehensible input part. But we do see that continuing today, even with the most recent publications that have looked into the work of Stephen Krashen, that we continue to see the understanding of the language, the comprehending of the language as being incredibly pivotal to that acquisition process. So we want to use various ways to check for understanding as we are making the input comprehensible for our students, because that is what's going to help us to keep aligned with what the students need for moving forward, and to use that formative information as a guide for our teaching. So a couple of questions to leave you with about your own teaching, so you can be reflective on this idea of comprehensible input in your classroom. So are you integrating regular comprehension checks into your teaching practice? If you are, great, keep going. Hopefully we've added a couple of more listening today to what you can be doing in those moments. And if you're thinking maybe you're not doing so many checks, perhaps you're doing a lot of the comprehensible input techniques to make it comprehensible, but not so much about the comprehension checks, so maybe that's a goal for yourself moving forward. And then how can you ensure that students are demonstrating their comprehension at the desired proficiency level? So remember, it is not, did you understand, do you get this? Not what happens in all of our workshops when the presenters ask us as teachers, but want to make sure that when we are checking for that comprehension, that it is truly asking detailed questions or having students produce language or to show their more in-depth understanding rather than just saying, yes, I understood, because they may feel like they understood, but the answers to the questions that we get when we do those comprehension checks may show a different scenario. And then what adjustments can you make based on the insights gathered from your comprehension checks? So that first thing, you are providing comprehensible input and you're doing all of the techniques and procedures to make sure the language is comprehensible for students. It's at their proficiency level. And then you are getting really comfortable with checking for understanding and making sure it's not just that, did you understand, but you're getting really in depth to make sure students understood. But then what are you doing once you get the information to that comprehension check? How are you using that to move forward with your teaching? So hopefully you're seeing that by incorporating these effective comprehension checks, that you can ensure that your students are not just engaging with the language, but they're understanding it, and that you can actually use what you gain from those checks to inform your teaching moving forward. So be sure to check out the show notes, because you will see the link to the blog post that I have, which is woclassroom.com/comprehension checks. Again, the link is also in the show notes if you want to see everything with examples in a more visual way. And I'm also putting the link to the episode on total participation techniques that I did with Timothy Chavez back on episode 120. So you can find that in the show notes as well. And you can also sign up for Talking Points, my weekly email newsletter with tips and resources for language teaching. And you know, there are also those links to get in touch with me if you'd like to work together. And we can do that either in person in your school, or we can do that remotely. Thanks for spending this time with me today, and I will talk to you soon. Bye for now. Thank you for listening to the World Language Classroom Podcast. Be sure to follow or subscribe wherever you're listening so that you never miss an episode. Let's keep the conversation going on social media. Connect with me on X, aka Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, at WL Classroom. And for even more valuable resources, visit my website, WLClassroom.com, where you'll find over 300 blog posts about language teaching. So stay inspired, keep growing, and continue making a difference in your language classroom.